to live righteously. Hey, it's me, Richie T, and it's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 131, where in the second and third block, we talk to Ryan Rose, who admittedly is dealing with an alcohol addiction, wants to talk about that in the LDS Church. Also wants to talk about how once upon a time, he was in an addiction recovery video for the LDS Church while he was drunk. So listen to that story in the second and third block. Fascinating story. Before we get started into that, though, I want to remind people that they can subscribe to our email mailing list. You can do that at theculturalhall.com. It's right there on the right-hand side. Just give us your email address. We don't sell it or anything, but we will send you emails. You can find us on Pinterest. It's under The Cultural Hall. Find us on Google+. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter at The Cultural Hall. And you can. We actually also have a YouTube channel, but we don't do anything with that yet. Not yet. We're working on it. Also, make sure that you notice that we're doing the Daily Mormon News Report, and then on Sunday night we'd have kind of a weekend recap. It's a great way for you to stay in and up to date with what's going on in the LDS Church, and then listen on Mondays to our Articles of News. If you've never heard of that before, on Monday we do an hour to an hour and a half all about what's going on in Mormon news, some of the stuff that we cover in our Daily Mormon News Report, some of the stuff we don't cover, and it's a great time for you to be able to get that. You can subscribe to us on iTunes. You can find us on Stitcher. It's a great place to listen to us. And there's other podcasting apps, as people indicate. Wanted to share this email. This is based on this last week's, that is May 26th, Articles of News. It says, Dear Cultural Hall, it's Dave in Utah again. I have a few more comments, says Dave. Number one, if someone is pointing a gun at you, they are threatened to kill you. If a policeman points a gun at you and says, don't move, the implied threat is, or I'll kill you. Or if a robber points a gun at you and says, give me all your money, the implied threat is, or I'll kill you. If a rapist breaks into a woman's house, points a knife or a gun at her, and says, take all your clothes off, the implied threat is, or I'll kill you. You get my drift. Number two, he says, I wasn't justifying his racism, talking about Cliven Bundy. I was trying to clarify his comments. I don't think that he is necessarily a racist. So you're going to have to go back and listen to the May 26th Articles of News to get all this. Number three, Rob, that is DJ Rob, who is on that Articles of News. Even if he is racist and ignorant, so what? He owns a ranch in the middle of nowhere selling cows for meat. What possible harm could come from him having racist views? Well, I suppose we could get into that right now, Dave, but I'm just reading your email. His sphere of influence extends to his family and the people that work for him, which is too much, David. How could he possibly have an effect on anyone elsewhere in the country? Because that means that if we allow racism in that case, it could be allowed anywhere. In a few months, the news will not care about him and he will be out of the public eye. Who cares what his views about race and welfare are? Okay, well, that's that. Number four, the SWAT team, he says, didn't show up to kill his cows because of his personal views about race. They did it because he refused to pay fees. That's the issues. A few decades ago, the news could have outed him as a Mormon, and the public could then discredit everything he said and stop listening or see Bundy as not deserving the same protections and liberties we enjoy. I think that makes people decide to stop listening is a bad thing. I think in this case, the brand of racist was used to get people to stop caring about what happened to Bundy and mentally shift focus elsewhere. And then number five, an addendum to my comments about boob jobs, which has been something that we've talked quite a bit here in the Cultural Hall in the last couple of weeks. He says, I think Brianne, who is one of our host panelists here on the Cultural Hall, stated reason for considering surgery was a good one. She saw how things changed when she was pregnant and nursing, and she liked it. Not because she got compliments or because she compared herself to Kate Upton or whatever. Doing something because you want to do it is legitimate in my mind. You don't need to justify it by saying you are doing it to benefit your kids. Just do it because you want to. Keep up the good work, says Dave in Utah. And now the second and third block of the Cultural Hall.
Looking for a change in your workout? Are you looking for real results? Pure Bar is the fastest, most effective, yet safest way to transform your body. In just 55 minutes, you will achieve a full body workout on the areas women struggle with the most: hips, seat, abs, and arms. The Pure Bar technique is low impact, protecting your joints by avoiding any bouncing or jumping. The technique works to defy gravity by tapering everything in and lifting it up. Come check out Pure Bar today in Draper at 123rd South and 200 200 East, just three blocks east of the freeway. Your first class is free and there's no obligation. Mention that you heard this ad on Cultural Hall and take 10% off any class package. Give us a call at 801-523-6215 or visit us online at www.purebar.com. That's PUREBARRE.com and select the Draper, Utah location. Pure Bar. Lift. Tone. Burn.
Hey, this is Dan, the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. I'm so excited. It's time for the PC Laptops Super Tax-Free Sale on the best hand-built in the USA desktop and laptops on the planet. PC Laptops will pay the sales tax on your behalf. Plus, every PC Laptops desktop computer comes with a lifetime parts and labor warranty. So if your hard drive blows up in 10 years, you're covered 100%. Tax-free sale and lifetime warranty? It doesn't get any better than this.
Oh, yes, it does.
If you have an old computer of any brand, we'll buy it from you and transfer all your data to your new PC Laptops computer for free. Amazing. So visit us at any one of our 8 locations right now or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's the tax-free sale at PCLaptops.com. At PC Laptops, we love to save you money.
It's time for the second block of the Cultural Hall, and here with us is Ryan Rose. Now, that name for you lifers, meaning you folks that have listened to every episode of the Cultural Hall, or you little longer time converts, you might recognize that name, but go, I don't know why I recognize that name, so let me give you some context. Ryan emailed into the show. He says, I'm almost a lifer. I listen to them every week. I'm just trying to get caught up on the old episodes, and he really loves that we're kind of progressive, and he puts it in quotes, so I'm going to ask you about that here in a little bit.
Okay.
Says, I'm mostly reaching out to you today because of a story I had to share. And in talking with others, I've come to the conclusion that it's too good just to keep to myself. So he says, and this is the email that we've shared in a previous episode of the Cultural Hall. So if this sounds familiar, it's because I've read it to you before. It says, I'm in the process of recovering from an alcohol addiction and rediscovering my own testimony. I'm 24-year-old divorced male. I got married when I was 19 in the temple. And after my divorce, I started drinking, fell away from the church. So on and so on. Long-winded. Jeez, Ryan keeps writing. He reached out to the church to do a promotional video for the addiction recovery program, wherein you were under the influence during the time that the LDS Church's addiction recovery program films were filmed, and you can see them, and we'll put those in association with this episode. Anyway, so now he's here to talk about his whole story. Thank you for being here, Ryan Rose.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Did I do okay about giving
up? Yeah, that pretty much covers it. That's kind of the gist of my story, I guess.
So let's back up a little bit. Family, all right? Mm-hmm. You born and raised in Utah?
Yeah. Born and raised Kaysville, Davis County area.
That's north of Salt Lake.
Yeah.
And a little bit more conservative than Salt Lake would be.
Very, very LDS community. I mean, it's rare up there growing up to, you know, you have one of your friends and it's like, you're not a Mormon? Like, just mind-boggling. So it's a pretty Mormon-heavy area.
And everyone knows who the not Mormon kid is because he's got like 20 Book of Mormons at his house.
Exactly. And everyone's always inviting him over to, you know, the weekly activities and, hey, come to sacrament with us.
He's like, I'll go just because that's where all my friends are. It's mutual,
exactly.
I guess.
Like, if I wanted to go, trust me, I would have gone by now.
Yeah, where is that? Oh, there's an LDS church?
Yeah.
Big family?
No, I'm the oldest of family of five, so three kids. I've got a little brother and a little sister.
Okay, cool. And so you're setting a great example for them.
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm not the favorite. That would be the littlest one. She's the last hope.
Oh, that's
so. Yeah, exactly. They're holding on to that one.
Family pretty LDS.
Yeah, really LDS. Parents both super active. Dad served a mission.
Where did Dad serve?
Lima, Peru.
Okay.
So, I mean, that was kind of always growing up. He's got four brothers, so there's five boys. They all served missions. A lot of his sisters served missions as well. So me being the oldest grandchild and everything.
So you're also the oldest grandchild, too.
Oldest grandchild on that side. So it was kind of like there was a lot of LDS pressure coming down from the upper echelons of my family for, you know, myself and my little brother as well. And, you know, just wasn't me.
So yeah. Let's talk about it. It wasn't you.
Yeah.
High school, middle school. When did you start to go? Maybe not
middle
so
school.
Much.
You know, kind of the time when you grow up and realize, hey, this is now my life. It's not my parents' life. I kind of want to figure out what I want to do and what I want. And it just was never. It was just never what I wanted. It always seemed like
that being
it was
the
pressure.
Church was never that you wanted, or just the pressure, or what do you mean?
Just kind of both. I didn't mind the church. I've always thought the church is a great thing, and I still do. You know, even now, I think the church is awesome for what it does for people. But it was, as I said in my email, you know, you guys are more progressive. I like the more progressive side. I like being my own individual instead of just being the hey, I go to church every Sunday just because it's what you do. I'm definitely a big questioner. Mm-hmm. And so I had a lot of questions, not just around the church, but life in general around that time. And was just like, hey, is this real? Is this just what I'm supposed to do? Is there something behind this? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of where I was at that point, and just kind of realized that, you know, the church thing maybe wasn't my forte. Yes.
So parents go to church though, because then you get the teenage to parent struggle of I'm not going to church. Oh yes, yeah, you are.
Exactly, and that was really hard. And I went every single Sunday probably until I graduated high school, just because it's what made my parents happy. And I mean, like we mentioned before, all my friends were there, so I didn't mind going to church just because it was for me. It was just another excuse to hang out with my friends, you know, teachers' quorum and priest quorum and all of that. So I didn't mind that. It just, I wasn't, you know, super, I guess, missionary focused. Kind of when you become a young man, it's always, okay, so now we're preparing you to go on a mission. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, I really want to go to college. I really like to travel. I don't necessarily want to do this whole church thing. I kind of want to explore life before I decide that that's what I want. Mm-hmm. And it was just so much pressure to, like, right at 19, go and serve a mission. And so for me, I don't know. It just didn't quite make as much sense. It's just one of those. I always tell people, when you just know it's not for you, you know. There's no way. I mean, I could have gone and faked it, but I didn't feel like that was doing the church justice or myself justice.
Was there a lot of pressure? Like your parents would talk about it a lot. Did that occur, or did you maybe infer more pressure?
No, I'm sure I inferred more pressure. There was never, hey, when are you going to go? My mom really, really wanted me to go, I think. Mm-hmm. She never really said that, but you could definitely tell that was something that I think she got in her own life was, if I'm going to be, you know, the mother that I want to be, I need to raise my boys to serve missions.
Sure. There's definitely a sense of accomplishment where you go. And it's not like you check off a box, but you go, you know what? I believe, and I've taught, you know, my children to believe. And if they believe, then they would obviously take this next step to go and do it.
And they would go. And, you know, and I still feel really bad, I guess, to this day about that. Obviously, it was my own life and I had to decide. But that is one thing that I still, you know, I'm like, you know, I guess I feel bad that my parents feel less of themselves because I didn't go. Mm-hmm. It wasn't on them. That's totally on me. So it's kind of one of those where it's like, hey, when we get to the pearly gates, you're going to have to answer for your actions. And you did the best you could with the situation that you were given, which is me. So,
yeah, which, you know, if your parents have any sort of feeling about that, that's sort of their feelings at that point, because
exactly,
they can't control what you decide to do.
Yeah. And I've noticed in the last couple of years, I think they've really kind of understood that a lot better. I've noticed our relationship has gotten a lot better. My brother's kind of in the same vein as me. We're not, you know, active by any means. He's less, even less active than I am. But I think the relationship has gotten better the more my parents realized, you know what? They're good people. Just because they haven't really done the church thing doesn't mean that they're bad people. And I think the relationship has gotten a lot better there. And we're able to be more open about church and have those discussions more as adults, as opposed to just, hey, you will do this because I say and because it's what I feel. So,
well, and it's like, you know, I never really understood it until the last couple of years as I've been a parent, because I kind of became instant parent. And this idea of agency, like I always thought I kind of got it. Like, yeah, you get to choose whatever.
Yeah.
But it's interesting in the parental role with children, how much different the idea of agency becomes.
Exactly.
Because it really is. Okay, well, you know what? as much as I want you to do things, and maybe I can coerce you to do to make the choice that I want you to make by punishing you if you don't, you know, choose what I want you to do, or forcing you to do the right thing. Ultimately,
it's your decision. And I've had friends that were, like you said, coerced into missions and came home early. And I saw the struggle there. And it just didn't make sense that you would go if you didn't want to. Mm-hmm. There was just no, you know, and everyone says, I didn't want to go. A year into it, I changed my attitude and it was the best experience of my life. But for me, I've always seen things that, look, if I'm not going to really give this any of my effort, I'm just not going to do it. There's no reason to pretend that I want to do it if I don't want to. Mm-hmm. So that's how that kind of was.
So we talk about middle school kind of being the time where you start to question things. Do you remember the things that you were questioning, like big picture things, or was it just like...
Really, it was big picture things. And I think a lot of it was I had non-LDS friends. I never had kind of pulling it into the addiction problem, I never had a moral aversion to alcohol. Or, you know, obviously I realized there are certain, you know, there were drugs that are bad, but I had friends that participated in those activities and it didn't affect their schoolwork. It didn't affect their family life. It didn't affect them as a person. And so I started to question those things of, okay, why do we say these things are bad? Why are we judging this person so when they're a really good person? I can call them at you know, in high school, 10:30 at night run out of gas and say, hey, man, you know, I really need some gas. Can you come help me? And they would be there in a heartbeat versus someone who I knew that was LDS that wouldn't. Mm-hmm. So that was a whole point of contention for me of, you know, why is this not okay? Mm-hmm. Why do we, you know, that way? And there were a lot of other things of that nature that I just didn't understand why they were bad. Dating was one of them. I didn't understand why at 16 years old, why is dating a singular person exclusively? Why is that a bad thing? Why does that make me a bad person? And I think the church, I've noticed in recent years, has really shied away from this, and it's awesome, and I love the direction that things are going. Mm-hmm. Less of, hey, don't do this, 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 and more of, let's just love everyone and just kind of work on being better people than focusing on super specifics.
Yeah, so many don't do-do-dos.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's how it was back then. And it was like, hey, I have a steady girlfriend. You know, I have friends that partake in these things, but we're all really good people. We all help each other. You know, I'm going to help the lady down the road mow her lawn. And that has no bearing on my soul and me as a person, just because I might not do some things that the church agrees with, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how in high school, the whole attitude, that's when I started to question. It was big picture things, but more specifics. It was just kind of like, why does this way?
But all the while still going to church.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to church, like I say, every Sunday and had good friends there and, you know, honestly had deep spiritual experiences, you know, felt the spirit very strongly at the church. And I think a lot of my questioning too was, came from people's reactions. My parents have always said the church is perfect, the people aren't. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, part of the reason I like the cultural hall so much is you guys acknowledge that and you say, hey, yeah, man, we're all just people. We're doing this thing. And I realized in the neighborhood that I grew up in, I got a lot of negative looks because of the way I dressed or the car I drove, the music I listened to. And I didn't really like that. I couldn't understand why this church that preached non-judgment was so judgy.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a huge thing for me in high school and junior high, I think.
So you graduate from high school, then what happens?
Yeah. So I graduated from high school in 2007. All the while, all through high school, I'd been dating this girl.
Did you graduate from seminary?
I did graduate from seminary. Yeah. Yeah. So, and that was, I always joke that my parents would have been more upset had I not graduated seminary than if I hadn't graduated high school. Like it was a very important thing. So I did that, you know, got my Eagle Scout, just kind of all of those things that my parents wanted me to do.
So on paper, it seems all intents that for all intents and purposes, the next thing is, all right, well, he's deacon, he's teacher, he's priest, he's Eagle Scout, he's seminary graduate, mission.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, I graduated when I was 17 years old. I'm young for my grade. Mm-hmm. So I had a couple years that I was able to fit in college. So I even got ordained an elder and got my patriarchal blessing. And it was just kind of like you said, on paper, hey, these things are what they need to be. Mm-hmm. But it just wasn't me. I was dating, like I say, I had been dating this girl all through high school. We went to school together.
When did you meet her?
I met her sophomore year. Okay. Ninth grader, sophomore year. We were friends prior to dating. But once I got down to school, I was like, you know, I'd rather pursue a life with this person. I'd rather pursue a life with her and just life in general than really devoting all this time to the church that I'm not super sure about in the first place.
Okay.
It just didn't make sense at the time. I went down to school, College of Eastern Utah.
There you go. Go which, Price.
Yep. Shout out to the Eagles. I think they're still the Eagles.
I think so too.
I don't know. But
yeah, why not? If they're not, someone will let us know.
They'll, yeah.
It's USU
Eastern now.
Yeah.
So I always tell people, yeah, I went to USU Eastern. People are like, I recognize that. CEU, no one has any idea. So I went down there for a couple years, all while dating this girl. And for one summer, I moved up to Jackson Hole.
River Guide?
Yeah, doing a lifeguard. I was a lifeguard at their pool up there, but was friends with river guides and stuff. And I'm a big outdoorsy person. I mean, I met a lot of people up there that were kind of into the party scene.
Sure.
And did all that. And so I kind of started drinking a little bit for fun up there.
Had you never drank before?
I'd never drank before. Once I got up to Jackson, that was kind of when I let loose. The girl that I was dating wasn't up there. She didn't go with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just kind of like, hey, this is my single time. I'm going to do what I want to do. And so I started drinking up there. When I came home from that summer, my parents kind of gave me the, hey, we got to figure this out. You're either doing a mission or you're not. And the girl I was dating was same thing. She said, look, we got to figure out what we're doing. Either we're going to get married in the temple or this is just going to be done.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of either church, do a mission for my parents, church, get married for this girl I was dating in the temple, or do none of those things and just please myself. And I'm a very selfless person. And I just, you know, I was like, well, you know, we can definitely do church. We'll get married in the temple. I'm not going to go on a mission because I really don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, between those three choices, I would rather get married in the temple. And
was the aversion to a mission because you didn't necessarily know that you believed it, that you didn't want to be away for a couple of years and devote that much time? Or what was the main contributing factor for you to be like, meh?
Yeah, it was kind of time in both. I didn't really know that I believed it. I know now that I believe it, but I still, as a logical brain, I go, I believe this, but I reserve room for any proof to the contrary.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I was, but I didn't want to devote the time. I realized that I had done 2 years of college and I could further my life and my career path and kind of this relationship that I had invested, you know, 5 years up to that point of, I realized I would rather pursue that than kind of just throw it all away for a mission. That's how I saw it in my mind. I was like, I'm going to throw away everything that I've built up till now to go on this mission. And I didn't see a payoff.
Okay.
It didn't appeal to me. So.
So then you decide, hey, boom, marriage. That's the
thing.
Yeah.
So we decided, I had talked to my bishop and I had let him know. I said, hey, you know, I had this experience up in Jackson Hole, drinking with some friends. Obviously this girl and I, we had been dating, exclusively for so long, you know, the physical happened, you know, mm-hmm. They say, oh, you shouldn't date because it's more temptation to premarital sex. They're not lying to you. That's a true thing.
Sure.
Obviously. And that happened. And so my bishop said, look, you know, this is what we got to do. If you want to be worthy to go through the temple, you know, we got to obviously wait a year before you two can get married. And
married in the temple. So you can get married and then wait and get married in the temple.
Exactly. So we decided, you know, if we're going to get married, we're going to get married in the temple. That's what our families would be happy with. That's what was going to make this girl happy. I didn't really care. Honestly, I was cool with either way. We could get married civilly, then go through the temple. But if you want to do the temple, I can wait this year, do the church thing really, really heavy so that next year being 2009. So we had started this process in about 2008,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that way in 2009, we can get married in the temple.
It seems really difficult to take a relationship from a physical intimacy level to be like, hey, and for the next year.
Yeah. It was,
it's intermission.
It was super hard. Well, and they always say, I mean, once you start, you obviously don't want to stop.
Right.
And that's exactly what it was. It was just kind of, I went from Jackson where it was kind of like, oh, I'm just, you know, cracking open a beer with my buds, sitting on the river all day and just kind of enjoying a lifestyle that I had always envisioned myself living to, hey dude, now it's no booze. It's no girls. It's going to church every Sunday, being active in the elders quorum, doing all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know, just what I envisioned of being a square. And I was just like, oh man. But the girl at the time, you know, I was like, she's to me, it was worth it. It was worth waiting the year because that's what she wanted, and mm-hmm. I wanted to make her happy. So that sure. was what it was. But
so,
yeah.
So did you? Were you able to
yeah,
wait the whole year?
We did. We did an entire
okay, so that,
year.
So that to me, you said that a mission would be hard.
Yeah.
I think that to me, like if... I think that would be a harder undertaking than
yeah.
than a mission in a lot of ways.
It was, I mean, it was difficult, but at the same time, as I see the mission, I'm going, I can't have my cell phone. I can't have the internet. I can't mm-hmm. hang out with my friends. Yeah, sure. It was hard to not have sex, but at the same time, can I?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It was hard to not have sex, but at the same time, being able to go home after a day of work or hanging out with friends and be able to watch a little bit of TV, kick back, crack open a Mountain Dew because, you know, couldn't have a beer.
That's what you
and,
do.
Exactly. And just kind of hang out. That was, to me, it made the challenge of not having sex easier than, hey, you're going to go away for 2 years. You can't have sex for 2 years. You can't watch TV for 2 years. Like, mm-hmm. just living this mm-hmm. monkish lifestyle that I was like, I can get rid of one thing. I can't get rid of all of these things. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of there. But we did the whole year. So it was.
So then married in the temple?
Married in the temple. Salt Lake Temple.
Gorgeous live session
yeah,
then.
Yeah, it was cool. Salt Lake Temple is really rad.
Had she been through the temple before?
She had not.
So you got to do that whole thing.
Yeah, so she had not been through the temple. I had been through the temple about a month prior to our wedding.
Mm-hmm.
I went with my parents, and I've been through, let's see, St. George, Bountiful, and Salt Lake Temple.
So okay.
I've been through all those. Salt Lake Temple was really cool.
Yeah.
It was a fantastic day. You know, August, it was super pretty. And everything worked out nice. I mean, it was a really, as far as things go, I mean, looking back, I have no problems with the wedding itself. It was a gorgeous ceremony and everything was cool.
But it sounds like looking back, you have some sort of problems because yeah. the way you phrased that.
Yeah. I mean, the reservations were obviously the relationship, itself. And that kind of leads into kind of the next phase of where the story goes is.
Well, we'll get to that in the third block here of the Cultural Hall. But so just to recap,
gotcha.
If I make sure I got it right.
Yeah.
Church every Sunday.
Yep.
Mission not the thing. School, it's College of Eastern Utah.
Yep.
All the while still dating the girl. She didn't go down to College of Eastern Utah, did she?
She did for one semester. But
it didn't really
yeah,
work
yeah,
kind, of,
exactly.
kind of work out.
Yeah.
Made the choice. Temple marriage.
Yep.
Abstinence.
Yeah.
Boom, you did it.
Yeah.
This huge commitment.
Yeah.
And was able to do that wedding day, gorgeous
yep.
August day.
Yep.
Okay, coming back in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
We invite you to claim your courage by shedding shameful thoughts, actions, and feelings that disrupt your ability to live authentically or feel connected to others by letting go of fear, blame, and your idea of perfection. The Healing Group, where women go for hope, growth, and healing. We're the home of the Sex Girls. Are you a mother feeling lost in a relationship and feeling stuck? Are you feeling overwhelmed by life? Schedule an appointment now. Can't make it to our office? No problem. Meet with a therapist individually or with a group in our virtual clinic right from the comfort of your own home. Visit thehealinggroup.com for more information.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
It's time for the third block of the Cultural Hall. All right, Ryan. So married in the temple, you said
yep.
marriage, great, but there's yeah. reservations. So what are we talking about?
Yeah. So up to this point, we had really been doing the long distance relationship with this girl. We started dating when I was 16. And at 16, you think you know everything in the world.
Yeah, you know everything.
You do, which is crazy.
I have a 16-year-old and he knows everything.
He does know everything. I once you get older, you realize
you know nothing.
I got stupid. People have been lying to me my whole life. This adulthood is a sham.
Yeah. What is this?
Seriously.
What is this?
You mean everyone out there is just faking it like me?
Yeah.
And this runs?
What?
Crazy. So, yeah, we had made it work as teenagers. And obviously, as teenagers, you can kind of make that work. As we grew up and kind of changed into our people who we became, we realized that, you know, teenage us was totally different than adult us. And we had been doing a long distance relationship since I graduated to the time we decided to get
3 years.
Yeah, basically until we got married. Cause I had done, you know, down at school was when we were doing the year of abstinence. I had done another year of school. I had gone out and done summer sales. So we were doing a long distance relationship for all the time until wedding day. Basically, I came back from doing sales, got married and moved down to St. George. And it was like, hey, now we're together 24/7. And it didn't work out as well as we thought it was going to.
Cause, like what?
I mean, it worked really well for the first year. And I think we stayed kind of true to the church, you know, went to church every Sunday. We're working these really hard jobs. I got a job down at a boys' home, like at a, you know, swing shift. She was working half days at a school. We only had one car. I mean, just the broke married story, just trying to make things
work.
The
one that really brings people together in most cases,
exactly.
It seems. Yeah.
And it did. And we then decided to go back and do another summer doing sales. So my second summer doing sales.
Bug or alarms?
Yeah, yeah, pest control sales.
Pest control, yeah.
Yeah, and she decided to come with me. And I think the stress of her being away from home. She had never really been away from home in her entire life. We moved out to North Carolina, and that's really far from Utah.
Right. And it's North Carolina, so that could have been part of it, too.
Exactly, which is Charlotte is...
Is not Utah.
It's not. It's really not. That's to say the least.
No offense, Charlotte. And Charlatans.
I love Charlotte to death. You have no mountains, and that just... It was...
Where am I?
Yeah.
I don't know. What the...
Yeah. So that was hard, and I think it just kind of spiraled from there. You know, my working all week during sales, Sunday comes around. I didn't want to go to church.
Sure.
I just wanted to hang out. Same with her. And I think it just kind of spiraled from there. Money got tighter. Sales didn't go as well as we wanted. There was just a lot of contention there with personalities we realized didn't mesh. And we had made it work long distance because we were never around each other.
Right.
Now we're around each other all the time. And we realize, not that I don't like you, but we just don't mesh.
Yeah,
as well
I
as
love you,
thought.
But I don't love this.
Exactly. I love you as a human. I don't really like you.
Right.
I don't want to spend time with you. If we were friends and I could see you once a week, we'd get along great. But the fact that we have to be here together all the time, I don't want to spend time with you, which is a horrible thing to say. And I realize, you know, in retrospect, had I realized that at that time, things would have been a lot different. But I realize now that I didn't like spending time with that person. I didn't want to be around her. I would rather go hang out with my friends and play Call of Duty on a night off of selling than hang out with her and do whatever she wanted to do. So that was a difficult process. So we moved home after a difficult summer, and I got a job selling cell phones in the mall, and she got a job down in Salt Lake, a little bit, you know, about 30 minutes from where we lived. And things just really started to go downhill. We moved in with her parents. Yeah, which is a mistake.
Yeah, like, automatically have some contention there.
Exactly. And I always tell people you need to do at least 5 years on your own before you could move back in with your parents if you're married. Because I think it caused her to kind of revert back to a stage of high school almost.
Sure.
She relied more on her parents than she relied on me.
Right.
Which is super demasculate. Like, you know, I'm not taking care of my wife. She calls her dad to help her with problems before she calls me.
Right. It's like, I got this. I'm your husband.
Exactly.
I got this.
I can do this. You know, I can fix your car. I can do these things. And that stuff just wasn't happening. And so we just kind of started to drift apart there, up until the point that we got ourselves in further kind of drama by saying, oh, if the marriage, you know, we tried the marriage, it's not working. But what will fix our marriage is if we move out and get, you know, an apartment together, that will help the marriage. And it didn't.
No?
No.
So then a kid was the solution.
Oh my gosh. I'll tell you, if she's listening to this, I mean, you're a solid human being, but I'm so glad that never happened.
But did you guys talk about that? That was a thing?
We honestly had, you know, it was like, hey, this isn't working. Maybe if we had a kid, it, you know, it would bond us together. And one of those things that just makes me realize that whether or not this church is true, there's definitely a God and he's looking out for me because it didn't happen. And that's a huge thing for me. That was like, there were so many times that it should have, and I couldn't figure out why it wasn't happening.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm going,
oh, that's why.
Thanks, big guy. That was you were looking out for me. She started hanging out with this group at work, and they were drinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And so she realized, hey, we've been dating for so long. I never really had a single life. Can we start going out with these friends and doing this? You know, like, I kind of want to try alcohol. I've never tried that before. I was like, well, again, I don't have a moral problem with alcohol. I don't see it as a bad thing. Yeah, if that's what you want to do, if that's a life path you want to take, I will take that with you. I will be there with you to take that life path.
There was never the inclination from you to be like, hey, hold on. We remember this whole year of church for the temple thing, and, you know, why not?
No, because like I say, I had done the temple kind of for her anyway. Mm-hmm. So my aversion was always to, hey, we can go to church in the morning, or we can sleep in and go get Beto's breakfast burritos.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that second one sounds really, really awesome, and we can just lounge all day.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of always been my aversion to that, and it's been a very difficult thing for me to overcome, and still is, to get myself up and go to church. But so when she said, hey, I would rather go hang out and drink with all of these friends that we have as opposed to go to church on Sunday, in my mind, I was like, we should have done that from the beginning.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Where were you 3 years
exactly.
ago?
Exactly. Why did we do all of that? So we started going out with friends on the weekends and just hitting up a bar and doing whatever, until the point that I realized she started saying, hey, I'm going to go out with my friends tonight. Maybe you should go out with your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's fine. Sure. I don't, you know, again, like I say, there's a difference in personalities. Yeah, I'll go hang out with my friends. Guys night. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that started becoming more and more prevalent, to the point where it was, I never really saw her. And, you know, I started seeing things on social media and, hey, there's this other person, like, who's hanging on your wife?
Mm-hmm.
That's not
cool.
That's not Ryan. Who is that guy?
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, we kind of had a talk. She was like, yeah, I'm going to move out. Like, I want a divorce. So we did that. And that's when I really started drinking heavily, which kind of tailors into the alcohol problem. I mean, I was.
How much are we talking?
At that point, it was, you know, maybe half a bottle on a weeknight, a lot more on the weekends, you know, a bottle or two on the weekends, but nothing where it was every day, you know, just enough that if I had a crappy day, I would go home and, you know, drown my sorrows in the booze, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still, you know, to the point that if I went, you know, a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks without drinking, it wasn't an addiction at that point. It was just a coping mechanism.
Sure.
And then she decided she was wrong and moved back in. And so we moved back in. We had a good month where we were trying to do the church thing again. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that month, it was just like, you know what? It's just not. It really isn't. This time, like, for sure, we've got these papers. Let's just sign them. Let's just part our ways and go. And once I realized it was over, that's when I just was, I mean, every night.
You know? Why?
I just couldn't handle it. I think a lot of it was I really liked being drunk. People seemed to respond to me when I was drunk a lot better. So I started hanging out with my friends more. It seemed that, you know, people were laughing at me.
Mm-hmm.
Girls noticed me when I was a little more outgoing. I felt a little more, I guess, smooth is the best word when I was drunk. I felt like I could turn it on and I could get women to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And especially since I had just lost this relationship, you know, I just wanted just the companionship really, was what it was about. And so I, you know, just started drinking and I couldn't really sleep. Obviously that kind of messes with your emotional, like I couldn't sleep. I couldn't eat. I noticed the alcohol really helped me sleep. I could do, you know, a half bottle of vodka or whiskey and I was out for the night,
mm-hmm.
completely out, and could wake up in the morning and had a headache, but I could go to work and I could do work and I could get home. And then my mind would get going on, man, I got to sleep alone tonight. This sucks. Oh, but if I get super smashed, I can just pass right out and I'll never notice that I'm alone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of, and that went on for, probably a year and a half, 2 years almost.
Really?
Yeah. And that's really where the addiction kind of kicked in. And like I said, you know, in my email to you guys, I really, at that point, I was so mad I think at the church, it was kind of unfounded anger at the church of, mm-hmm. hey, I got married in the temple.
I did it the way I was supposed to.
Yeah, I tried your way. Why didn't it work? Why did it not work? And obviously, in retrospect, I wasn't in it. I was doing the motions. Obviously, it didn't work. Like, I really wasn't doing it how I should have. But I was still so mad. I didn't understand, you know, why. I didn't understand why this person would want to do that to me, would want to leave me after I'd put so much effort and energy into this relationship to make it work how she wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't wrap my mind around why, you know, the guy that she ended up dating, and bless her heart, no hard feelings at all. I'm glad it went the way it did. But the guy she ended up dating is not LDS whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
Just not that lifestyle. And I just couldn't, it was too much for me to cope.
Yeah. What about all the things that you said were important and the time that we tried and worked on all this stuff? And now this?
Yeah.
I mean, not that you wanted to be with her again, but it's just like, well, hold on.
Exactly. It was just a huge smack in the face to me. Like I say, not that I wanted to be with her again. I couldn't understand what was wrong with me, that I wasn't, you know, good enough and whatever. And so in order for me to kind of work through that, I started drinking heavily, and I realized that I could get a lot of female attention by the way I behaved when I was drinking. And so with that female attention, I felt a lot better about myself, mm-hmm. just because it was like, hey, okay. And, you know, also kind of a big middle finger to the church of, you know what, I'm going to go out and I'm going to party, and I abstained for a whole year, and now I'm going to indulge
in whatever I want,
content, and you can't stop me because this is what works for me. And I tried it your way, and it clearly didn't work. So
how'd that go?
It did not go well.
No.
Oh. Surprisingly.
Yeah, that's.
I ended up and kind of to close. I mean, not to close that chapter, but it went on. I mean, I dated a couple of girls kind of semi-seriously, but it was mostly flings and for lack of better words, one night stands, and just kind of pursuing that lifestyle of, hey man, are we going to go to the bar and are we going to find some girls tonight? Yeah, let's do that. And it kind of got to the point where I wasn't happy doing that with women, and I realized it wasn't fair to girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was kind of tapering off of that, or trying to, but the alcohol had kind of kicked in at that point. I had become very dependent on alcohol. I couldn't wake up without, you know, having the shakes. And so I was doing, you know, a bottle a day, you know, little, not the huge big handles, but one of the little minis a day, just to kind of keep up with myself.
Mm.
And that wasn't even to get drunk. That was just to function the way you and I are conversing
talking right now. Yeah. Geez.
So that was really hard, but I had kind of started dating one of my friends. We had kind of been dating and, you know, I realized, hey, having one steady person there is a lot nicer than having, like, you know, one or two a month. It's way better.
Because you don't get the, hey, do you remember last month? Oh, wait, that wasn't you. If you're actually dating someone for more than a month. Yeah.
So that was really cool. And then kind of all during that time, my fiance now and I kind of got in touch over Twitter, which is super funny.
Yeah.
Like, just super random. We'd met back in high school. We worked at the same place, and she had made a tweet about Chipotle.
Uh-huh.
I was like, you know, Chipotle, Cafe Rio,
the restaurant, right?
Yeah, the restaurant, yeah. Cafe Rio. This restaurant here in Utah is way, way better than Chipotle. Just offhand, just thinking, like, no intention beyond just kind of causing internet drama for fun. Like, right. Obviously not real drama.
Like, you're an idiot.
Exactly. And so she messaged me back and was like, well, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, you know. And I was like, well, okay, let's go then. So just kind of asked her on a date via Twitter,
mm-hmm.
and she ended up responding and saying, okay, time and place. Like, oh, okay, well, you know,
I'm socially medially obligated to this
I'll
now.
I'll take you on a date. And in my mind, the way I was back then was, hey, I am kind of dating this girl right now, but this is potential for another. I'll take her out on a date. Like, I don't care that I'm dating this other girl.
Sure.
So we ended up going on a date, and it was awesome. Like, it went super well, and I connected with her, and I was at that time, and I don't think she's ever heard me talk this out. So if you're listening now, babe, this might be some interesting stuff for you. I was really concerned. I realized that I connected with her on a friend level. I knew her. I knew that I liked her, obviously. And after that date, I was like, wow, she's a really cool girl. And we joke because one of the first compliments I ever paid her was, hey, you're not annoying. And
good. That's smooth. Way to go, Ryan.
I wasn't super smooth when I wasn't drinking. I said that when I wasn't drinking. So
babe, hang on. Before you go home tonight, I just want you to know.
You're not annoying.
You're not annoying.
Well, we were.
Good night.
That's a whole different. But anyway, what I had meant by that was to her was, you know, honestly, I've had all of this in the past and I couldn't stand a single one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sure, things happened that shouldn't have happened. And I understand that, you know.
It was fun. You forgive a lot if you know that your goal is that night and that's it.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it was, I can put up with that for tonight. Sure.
Yeah, sure. She's annoying and all this stuff. And then I realized, hey, after I had really connected with, and my fiance's name is Maddie, after I had really connected with Maddie, I went, oh my gosh, I like being around her. She can come over and hang out. And during a movie, I'm not wanting to just, you know, blow my brains out because you're just so annoying. So I paid her that compliment, and obviously she didn't take super well to that, but now she realizes that what I meant by it. But anyway, so I kind of tried to juggle the girl that I was dating before her and Maddie, and it was really
difficult.
You can't
serve two masters.
You can't serve two masters, and you really can't serve two masters when one of the masters you really can't stand.
Yeah.
So I started spending more and more time with Maddie, which was making it difficult on this other person. And, you know, I feel bad about it a little, but it worked out for all parties involved, I think. But I had, at this point, like I say, it was getting to bottles and bottles a day.
Mm-hmm.
So Maddie and I one night were hanging out, and we were heading back home. And, you know, I see the Chargers headlights, Dodge Charger headlights behind me, and I'm going, oh no, is that a Dodge Charger? Is that a cop? And I'm thinking, oh man, oh, this is so bad. And just looking up, and sure enough, the lights turn on, and I'm going, oh man, you know, we were heading back from a party, and you know, I pull the car in, and I had, you know, I'd been drinking, obviously, and the guy comes up and is like, hey, what's going on? And I'm a big gun guy. And a gun in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So I put my hands out the window just as a courtesy. And I just told him, I said, you know, officer, I want to let you know there's a firearm in the car.
It's what you have to do, as I understand
it. No, yeah, you don't.
In Utah, you don't have to?
I do as a courtesy. Okay. It's just a nice thing. I have a lot of friends that are police officers, and it's a good heads up. It's just a really nice thing to do. And so I told him, and he said, okay, do you mind stepping out of the car? And I said, no, it's not a problem. Step out of the car. And he just knew.
Yeah.
It was just like,
busted.
So have you been drinking tonight? And it's like, yeah, you know, I had a beer or two with some friends. Yeah, obviously. And so I ended up blowing and was way over legal. I think I blew like a 0.14.
Oh, my gosh. And it's 0.08 in Utah.
Yeah, 0.08 is legal limit. So I was
so almost
way
twice.
Over. So that didn't go over super well. And this is, I'm realizing now we can go back to the church video.
That's all right.
But so I ended up going to jail, and that night was really rough for me.
That's intentional, by the way.
Yeah.
They don't like to make jail
they
super comfortable.
They don't like, yeah. I mean, it was not, it just wasn't, I don't know what I expected, but I got there, and it was cold, and it was like middle of December, and I just was not, and I had been, you know, up to this point, I had been telling myself, you know, nightly, you're a good person. You know, so all this stuff happened and you have every right to be acting the way you are. You have every right to just sleep around and not care because of how you know, just kind of justifying my actions,
mm-hmm.
but you're a good person.
Right.
You know, and I sat there in jail looking around at all sorts of riffraff and, you know, people that really just need help probably. But in my mind, I was going, you're no better than any of these people.
Right, because you weren't.
No.
You wouldn't be there.
No, I wouldn't be there. Had I not been the person that I was, I wouldn't be sitting in jail. And so I, that night, just kind of thinking in my mind, I was like, okay, I can't tell my parents. My parents don't really know that I drink.
Mm.
I had hidden it all this time. Like, how am I going to, either you're going to get papers to their house that I got a DUI because, you know, all my stuff's registered to their house still. how am I going to, you know, my family, my dad served, all his brothers served mission. My grandparents are on a mission. Like, how, I mean, there's just no way. How am I going to get out of here? What's bail on it? Do you, like, there's just so many questions. And I had realized to myself that I'd been there for hours and hours and hours. And I tried to call my friends that I'd been at the party with, and none of them answered.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was still so partying that I just got and forgot about. My friend called me on the way, and the officer answered the phone and said, your friend's going to jail for a DUI. You know, this is where you can pick him up. The officer was super nice, super cool guy. Really cut me a break, like didn't nail me for the weapon in the car, which, I mean, that could have been a felony.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really nice. He understood. I mean, he pulled me over for a taillight, and he told me, he said, man, I didn't pull you over because you were driving erratic. I pulled you over for a taillight and you happened to be drunk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just doing my job. So he had informed my friends, but none of my friends were showing up. You know, all these people were coming in for drunken stuff and leaving within an hour, half hour. And I was just sitting there.
Yeah.
And so I, finally, Maddie, I called Maddie, got a hold of her, and bear in mind, we've only been dating for like 3 months up to mm-hmm. this point. She had no, I mean, no obligation to me. We weren't officially dating. She knows that I'm dating this other girl at the same time. I mean, really what she should have said, honestly, sweetheart, you should have said, rot in jail, I'm out.
Yeah.
So, but I'm really glad you didn't.
Yeah. But P.S., thank you for
exactly.
that.
Exactly. I love you. And she just, I mean, she came the next morning.
Good. I'm glad she let you ride it out in jail overnight.
She did. Well, and she didn't, I mean, the way the car situation was. Anyway, she couldn't get to me till the next morning. But I remember that night, I had basically in my mind, I was like, okay, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to get my gun back. I'm going to hike to my favorite spot of Farmington Canyon. And that's it. That's it for me.
You're just going to end it?
I'm done. Yeah.
That was the choice.
I couldn't handle it after the divorce, after having that humiliation with my family. After, you know, because obviously you get married in the temple in a divorce, that's a huge stigma.
Sure.
I couldn't handle that. Not really talking to my parents for the last year or two because I'd been boozing. Just a bad relationship all around there. I mean, multiple one. I just didn't feel good about myself. And I was like, I'm in jail. None of my friends are coming to get me. No one cares about me.
No one will notice.
My parents might care. I don't care. However I get out of here, I mean, worst case scenario, I stay in here for 2 days until the judge sees me and then he lets me free mm-hmm. for time served. So I'm going to be able to get my gun back. I'm done. I don't want to tell my parents. I don't want to do any of this. And so that was my plan. And I prayed to Heavenly Father. I said, you know, I'm coming home. For lack of a better,
save some room.
Yeah. Like I'm coming home. I basically told him, I had said, if there's any room for love for me, it's going to be with you. And I need to come home and I need to feel that love from you. And, just this weird, eerie feeling of peace came over. And obviously, you know, I was still drunk at that time. I was like, all right, you know, booze is kicking in. Like I'm just going to pass out. And I fell asleep, and then the next morning they said, Rose, you know, you're out of here. I was like, who in the world? You know, Maddie had said she was going to try and piece together some friends to come get me because she was in the car when I got pulled over.
Mm-hmm.
She probably just feels bad. And I walked out, and she was the only person there. No other friends, I mean, this girl that I had not spent enough time with, basically, like no reason. And she was just sitting there, and just the look on her face of just, hey, it's going to be okay. No judgment. No, you idiot. You put me in this situation where I had to explain to the cops what was going on and people come pick me up and then had to sleep at this house that I didn't feel comfortable at. Just no judgment. And at that point, I just knew. I was like, this girl has been, I mean, obviously she's got her agency, but she's been sent here for me.
Mm-hmm.
Heavenly Father knows, and he knew months ago what I needed, and this girl is it. And so, you know, I just asked her, I said, tears in my eyes. I just, you know, who paid for the, who do I owe the money to? And she just said, I did it. What do you mean? Like who else did it? That it was like $1,700.
Mm-hmm.
I did it. And so we just went home. You know, from there, I just kind of knew. And that, I mean, that's kind of our, I don't know where kind of to go from there. But I mean, you know, from there, it was just kind of really getting a control on my alcohol addiction. I mean, I knew I had a problem. And it took me a couple months before I could really stick with it. To the point.
Not that, easy, huh? Not just overnight.
It's not overnight. And I mean, you know, the judge tells you, hey, you're on probation for a year. You cannot have any alcohol possession, no nothing for an entire year. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, was like, he's never going to know. How can I do a whole year? This isn't that big of a deal. Like, mm-hmm. I'll just have a beer occasionally and whatever. And it got to the point where mentally I started slipping. I had a sense of just impending doom all of the time, like super conspiracy stuff that never really bothered me before, but like a helicopter would fly over the house. I'm like, they're coming to get me. Just like weird, weird stuff. Mm-hmm. And just starting to, if I went too long without a drink, I would start seeing things and things would happen. And I realized, dude, this is a big issue. You got to stop doing that. I made the decision one weekend, Easter weekend. I was like, you know what? This is my last hurrah. I'm done. And I went cold turkey on that first 2 weeks, man. Ooh, just seeing things and all sorts of weird stuff upstairs. But I stuck with it. And so that was about a year ago. Last year I quit. And so it's been an entire year.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. And I, you know, I tell people I've had slip ups here and there. I've had a drink at a wedding or whatever. And a lot of sober people will throw their sobriety away, you know, on one drink. And the way I say it is, you know, I've had a year of sobriety and 3 days where I messed up, mm-hmm. you know, 3 days that I didn't. So maybe, you know, 11 months and 27 days of sobriety. But so
as it works now, as you're looking forward now to being married again, mm-hmm. is the church, a part of your guys' relationship?
Yeah, and it is very much. And right now, you know, we went and talked to the bishop actually last week about just kind of getting back into church. I don't know where I'm going to stand as far as records and things go. We didn't really go into depth with him about all my transgressions. Obviously, having been through the temple, I know I'm in for quite a bit.
Yeah.
Quite a bit. And I, you know, I tell my fiance, so excommunication, I think, is a real possibility. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I would be really, really shocked if that isn't what happened, mm-hmm. Just because of the severity of what's gone on. But I'm looking forward to it. You know, it's just one of those things where the atonement is such a powerful thing that I'm at a point now where in high school, I hated going to church because of the judgy feeling and I didn't feel like I belonged. And it's so flip-flop now that I'm looking at it and going, all of you weird, judgy people need to get out of here. If you're so perfect, go away. Like, I'm not here. I don't need your perfectness. This is a church for sinners. And I think going to a lot of the addiction recovery program meetings really helped me realize that. I feel the Spirit stronger in those meetings than I do in sacrament meeting. And I, you know, honestly, all of the listeners and Richie, I don't know if you've ever been to one.
I've never been, but I've been tended to.
I highly recommend it. I mean, the Spirit is just so strong there because it is people going to Christ and to God with a broken heart and a contrite spirit. The truest definition of the atonement that I've ever seen in my entire life. Whereas, like I say, the whole problem that I had with the church growing up was it's all these perfect people in perfect houses with perfect cars and perfect, you know, everything going mm-hmm. to church. Why are they here judging other people? And you go to the addiction recovery and it doesn't matter what condition you show up in. Everyone loves you and everyone just wants to help you. And it's fantastic. So I think, like I say, now I'm really looking forward to just kind of moving forward and seeing what the next step is. But going into it this time with the intention of making it work for me, not working for the church, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So.
I've only got a couple more minutes, but I do want to ask you. So how did it end up that you were in a church video hungover? But literally, we got it.
Yeah. And I know. And I realized we glossed over that. So what had happened was I've been doing like just acting, modeling stuff since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you know how those things go. You have headshots on file with certain places and things. So the church has one of my headshots on file. They just called me up one day.
He looks like someone who could.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, he fits the part we're looking for. Called me and said, hey, do you want to do this video? It's for, you know, our new addiction recovery program. It's for a guy, you know, super cool story. Here's the story. Will you do it? It's on this day that I had off of work anyway. Will you do it? I was like, yeah, it's $250 bucks. Totally.
Yeah, you bet. Yeah, what am I doing? It. Yes.
Yeah, sure. For sure. Happened to be my birthday of 2011, something like that, or 2012. 2012 is when it was. I was like, man, I'll go down there. I've got the day off of work. I'll wake up. I'll take a, you know, shower, whatever, have a couple beers in the shower, drive on down there, do whatever filming they need to do. And then after I'm done, I'll go hit the bar with my buddies. And, you know, just obviously in retrospect, like watching the video now, I'm going, okay, again, there's another funny joke. Heavenly Father, like, man, it's so much more powerful to watch a story about addiction that I'm actually starring in with production value than just, you know, watching a video of like, hey, that's similar to my story. It's like,
Nope,
that's my story. So that's kind of how that happened. But yeah,
a couple things. One is in the future, you're going to need to get back in touch with us and let us know how everything is going.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people will be like, so did he get excommunicated?
Yeah, sure.
What happened?
Sure.
Did he get married in the temple? What's going on? So make sure you do that. Second of all, do you have a calling in your ward now?
No calling at all. Nope.
If you could pick one that exists or one that you made up, what would you pick and why?
One, I would think it would be one that I made up that I could pick. And obviously from this story, I would like to be the addiction kind of, I guess, person, if that makes sense. Basically somebody that you know, the church says, hey, we know addiction's a problem in the church. We obviously talk a lot about pornography addiction. The other addictions, we just kind of assume no one's doing.
Mm-hmm.
We know it's out there in the congregation. Ryan Rose sitting right there in the front has had this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem. Have him announce it to the whole congregation and say, if you have any of those problems, go talk to him. He'll help you figure it out. And that way I could kind of get people into addiction recovery. I couldn't be a counselor, but I could at least help them get into a position where they could find help.
Cool.
So,
And then finally, what is your favorite part of your faith?
Favorite part about my faith, I think, would be, like I say, the recognition of the atonement, seeing it work in my life. I know that it works. I mean, I can look at anybody straight in the face and say, dude, I don't care what you've done. It will work. Put in the steps and it will work. So I think my favorite part is just knowing 100% that the atonement's a real thing and it works. So
I'm excited to hear, like I've asked you to do, to check back in with us, knowing now that the choice to be there is yours.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of power in that. So please make sure that you keep in touch with us.
Absolutely.
And send us photos from your wedding and all that stuff. And where you guys are registered.
Yeah.
And
when's Bed Bath & Beyond.
Like you do. When are you guys getting married?
December 22nd. And it's going to not be in the temple just because we don't really know how that's going to work out.
Yeah.
But we're doing it in San Juan, Puerto Rico.
So. Cool. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
That'll be awesome. Nice. Good for you guys. Yeah. Just send my plane ticket here and I'll get it.
We'll get you an invite.
I'll be the guy who marries you. I can do that.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we hope that this has nourished and strengthened your body and that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. And that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row.